Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 317. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about temples and palaces and lots of people as we return to India. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. What follows is an encore episode of the Amateur Traveler because this is coming out at the Christmas vacation here in 2016, but it's an episode that I enjoyed on India, and it's one of the reasons that we're actually doing an Amateur Traveler trip to India next year in 2017. So I hope you'll enjoy it again. I'd like to welcome back to the show Dave Grenowetsky, who's come to talk to us about India. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
And if you don't remember Dave being on the show before, Dave did one of my favorite shows, actually, a show about Iceland. And we've had a couple of his photos from Iceland also up on the website. So it's a pleasure to have you back.
Great to be here.
So India, this was your first trip to India.
Yeah, our next door neighbors are from India, and they've been hounding us forever to make a trip with them to India, and we finally relented, although we only ended up spending a few days with them in India. They were pretty memorable days, and really glad that we finally followed through.
And then in terms of where you went, we're going to cover an itinerary that starts in Mumbai and ends in Rajasthan.
Yep, goes through Bangalore in the south, up into Rajasthan, spent some time in Delhi, and then had a little icing on the cake at the end and an Indian wedding, so a lot of fun.
Excellent. So why don't you walk us through your itinerary and what you would recommend based on what you learned for an itinerary of this sort of central part of India crossing from west to east?
Yeah, well, we landed first in Mumbai and went from Mumbai down south to Bangalore and spent 4 or 5 days in the Bangalore area seeing some amazing things, then bounced back up to Mumbai just for a change of planes, then to Udaipur, then to Jaipur, out to the jungles in Ranthambore, and ended up in Delhi with the obligatory side trip to Agra to see the Taj Mahal.
And then let's do that a little more slowly, because otherwise we're done. Yeah. In Mumbai, what do you recommend people see in Mumbai? What did you get a chance to see?
Well, I think the amazing thing is we are super big planners, and we work really hard and do all our homework and get everything ready to go. And basically, I think the rule that you need to understand in India is do your homework, but then throw the itinerary out the window, because basically India sets the pace and there's nothing you can do to change the pace. I would say that we probably planned to see about twice as many places as we ended up seeing, and that was just fine, because just the pace of India is part of the thrill of India. I would say the best thing to do is don't ever think about driving yourself. Get a driver everywhere. They're very inexpensive, and they're basically yours for the day, and they'll do anything you like. And so at India, when we landed in Mumbai, we got a night's sleep and got taken to the Gateway of India, which is a huge arch, which you've seen probably in many pictures of India, built to welcome King George and Queen Mary in the early part of last century. And from there, we were dumped from the cab, from our car, and sent off to the docks to buy tickets to go out to Elephanta Island, which is a World Heritage Site. These amazing caves that were built in the 5th to 8th century, Hindu and Buddhist caves, where they're carved huge temples out of the rock. So everything used to be one piece of rock, and now it's a cave that goes into the rock. And just an amazing place. And I think the fun part for us of the trip is because we weren't on an organized tour, we never saw another tourist basically in 3 weeks. Every place we were, it was Indian folks and us. And the Indian folks seemed to be great travelers themselves, at least within India. So there were lots of tourists, but very few non-Indian folks. So we were dumped in the middle of the masses, and literally the masses at the port gateway of India, and had to negotiate our way around. But the great news is very, very friendly people everywhere. And I think one of the real surprises is that English works very, very well in India.
Now, you mentioned the pace. So the restriction there being, you looked at the map and you said, well, it's only 25 miles from here to here, so we can do that. And then later on that day, we can do something else. And it just took longer to get around?
It just completely takes longer to get around. And we also, on the second day we were in Mumbai, it was the day of the Mumbai Marathon. And streets were closed everywhere, and our driver, who was a great driver and had backup plans on top of backup plans, my favorite quote almost of the trip was, he turned around and looked at us and said, "My shortcuts have become long cuts." And so just to go 10 miles might take 40 or 50 minutes.
Okay.
But there's just a lot to see. So we went back into town, and over the course of the next couple of days, we visited a place where Gandhi's headquarters for 17 years. And you'll hear along the course of this trip, we visited a lot of places that played parts in Gandhi's life. And this was his home at Mani Bhavan, where he spent the early part of the century. And we saw one of his rooms, just a pad on the ground, a low writing desk, a spinning wheel, and basically no other possessions. Very revered guy in the country, and his legacy is everywhere.
It's interesting, the spinning wheel, because I remember from watching the movie about his life, what a big proponent he was of the homespun garments so that you didn't have to rely on the imported fabric.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's a really, really interesting guy. I think one other thing that's kind of interesting for the American eye is to go to the beach. And the beach is a big part of Mumbai. And we went to Juhu Beach, which is a very, very popular place. And it was a really crowded beach. The one difference from America is everyone was fully clothed.
Mm-hmm.
Very modest folks, and they enjoy going to the beach and getting in the water, but they're completely dressed.
Interesting. And what did you have to put off in Mumbai for your next trip because of the realization you had to slow it down?
Well, there were several temples. The Ganesh Temple, which was one we wanted to get to, and that's a place that on a busy day, which apparently it was when we were there, they get as many as 100,000 people.
Oh, my.
And we looked at the line, and apparently as a tourist, you can essentially buy your way to the front of the line, but we didn't think that that was kind of the appropriate thing to do. So we kind of enjoy doing things as the locals do, but I don't think we had enough time to do it in the local fashion on that trip.
Okay. Now, a lot of people who've been to India say that it was overwhelming, that their initial response to India was that it just assaulted all the senses.
That's totally the case. And I think if you're not a really traveled person, that sense of overwhelmingness could easily morph into a little bit of fear. But when you realize that it's just, there's just a lot of people and they're all trying to get somewhere and they're all going in different directions, kind of organized chaos, and nobody's out to really get in your face or get in your way, there is some kind of aggressive commercialism going on. A lot of people want to sell you a lot of things, but you just say no and keep going. So luckily we've traveled enough that, you know, we never kind of trended into any scary feelings, but certainly overwhelming. Every one of your senses is turned all the way up to 11. It takes a bit of getting used to.
I'm just thinking where the last time we had you on talking about Iceland, are there two countries that are more different in character?
Yeah, 300,000 people in all of Iceland and probably 300,000 per block in Mumbai.
Okay. And then anything else you saw in Mumbai?
Well, we kind of rallied and then met our friends from the U.S., our neighbors flew over and met us, and we hopped on a plane and went down to Bangalore, which was going to basically serve as the hub for a number of visits. They're members of the Jain religion.
Okay.
And one of the things that they wanted to do in India, and I'm really glad we did, is we took a side trip from Bangalore to a place called Shravanabelagola, which is a Jain pilgrimage site, which has a huge monolith on top of the hill of one of the Jain deities. And it's a very important site to them. And we had to hike up what is pitched as 1,000 stairs to get to the top of this mountain. It turns out it's closer to 600, but 1,000, I think, sells a little better in the brochure. And we got up to the top of this thing, and there's this huge statue of this deity that's almost 60 feet high out of a solid piece of granite, and just a gorgeous site with a beautiful view of the surrounding temples and lakes and holy places, and just really, really worthwhile doing. And also got us for the first time on the trip out of the city and into palm trees in very rural area, and people driving their animals down the highway, and just an amazing set of contrast to what we've seen in the hustle and bustle of Mumbai.
What surprised you?
I think that what surprised me is that once you get out of the cities, kind of every 30 kilometers that you drive, things change. The architecture changes, the clothing changes, the crops change, the terrain changes. It really is a land of contrast. So you have all the contrast between rich and poor, which you obviously expect, but then the urban and renewal and the new versus old, and it's just amazing to drive along and have the feeling that you're in the middle of nowhere and then come across an amazing temple that's been there for centuries, and it's kind of there without a lot of fanfare. You know, it's the kind of place here that would have a fence around it and a ticket booth, and these are just off to the side of the road and just amazing sights to see.
Anything else you saw in the Bangalore area?
Yeah, well, we went also to the town. We did a day trip to the town of Mysore, which is famous for a huge, huge temple, the Mysore Temple, that was built, I think, in the 1600s for the last time. A lot of these things have been rebuilt so many times, it's hard to put the most recent date on them. But the Mysore Palace was a beautiful, amazing place. And the old Maharajas that ruled India, I think it was in the 40s, that they kind of got nationalized. And so all of those Maharajas' palaces kind of went to 50% ownership. So the Maharajas' family still got to live in them. But in general, they kind of turned into public areas in the front. So the Maharaja's family still has part of it, and the rest of it has been nationalized. So this was beautiful. The other thing that was amazing in Mysore, we saw a lot of cows everywhere. Of course, you see the sacred cows. But in Mysore, we were just there during a festival called the Pongal Festival, which is a celebration of harvest time. And the cows had all been painted fluorescent colors. So we were going down the street and we would see a fluorescent orange cow and followed by a pink cow. And it was just a totally amazing sight to see and a real twist on the cows that we saw in the rest of India. So fluorescent cows were not on our expected list.
Interesting. Now, Mysore, the sultans in Mysore, and I'm trying to remember whether they were part of the ruling Islamic leaders or not. And that's what I'm coming up blank with. That ruled India for so long.
Yeah, you're clearly a bigger student of history than I am, so we'll have to leave that one to Wikipedia to solve. But, I mean, there clearly is an amazing mix of Hindu, Sikh, Muslims in the country, and the various religious groups, for the most part, seem to get along in really close harmony. And it was interesting because we had different drivers and different guides and different parts of the tours and different parts of the country, and I think the kind of slant on the day's events always depended on whether you had a Sikh or a Hindu or a Muslim guy taking you around. So it was really fun to get a different view of everything. But everybody seemed to be very respectful of the other religious groups.
Okay. Anything else in that area?
No, but from there we went back up to Bangalore, hopped a plane to Udaipur, which is an amazing city, probably one of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen, situated around a lake called Lake Pachola. That lake is dominated by two palaces out floating in the lakes on man-made islands and a big palace on the shore. And this was basically our splurge city in terms of hotels. So we stayed in the City Palace Hotel one night, and then the next night we stayed in the Lake Palace Hotel. And both of those hotels are actually kind of featured in the 1,000 Places to See Before You Die book. So we got to check off two there, and staying in that City Palace was probably one of the most amazing nights I've ever spent in a hotel. You get to it on a boat, and we got there at the end of a full day of hiking around the city, and we arrived at the shore where the boat was there, and they basically said, "Mr. and Mrs. Granowetsky, we've been waiting for you." And I said, "Amazing, you know." And we got in the boat, and they took us out, and as we walked into the hotel, there was a guy on the roof sprinkling rose petals on us as we got into the building. And I've got to say, that's probably the first and last time that has ever happened to me. So just an amazing palace built by the ruling monarch there. And the other palace in the lake was a pleasure palace that he built for his son. So his son could be off with his many wives and girlfriends on a separate island and not keeping everybody awake on the main palace. One other interesting thing that we did, and again, it's something that I recommend, is we went to cooking school when we were in Udaipur, which was a lot of fun. We did a lot of internet research and found a woman named Sushma who offered a cooking class, just a one-day cooking class, and we met there, and it was another couple that were actually restaurateurs from Malta that were in the class with us, and we spent the afternoon learning all about Indian cooking and making our own meal, and then we sat down and ate our homework. So it was a great bunch of fun. We brought home an Indian spice box, and we've used it to make a number of meals since we've been home. So learned a new skill, met some new people, and really had an enjoyable couple of days in Udaipur.
And by the way, I did look up while you were talking, and Sultan Tipu of Mysore was in fact a Muslim leader. And yes, that was part of the rule of much of India was by the Muslims after invasion early on. And I don't remember what the year was.
Yeah, we actually went to Tipu's palace, which is built entirely of teak and supposed to be, I guess, much cooler in the heat. But then also Mysore Palace, as I recall now that you bring up Tipu's name, had to be rebuilt after Tipu leveled the city during, I guess, one of his many conquests. So the ebb and flow of the various leaders have caused a lot of architects to stay busy in India. So from Bangalore, we actually went to Jaipur, which is called the Pink City. The whole city was painted pink for the visit of a British monarch at one time, and it just kind of stuck. I guess they had enough pink paint in the back room that they just kept painting it that way. And again, we got another great driver, and we went outside of town to a place called the Amber Fort, and that's where we started to really feel some of the aspects of India that everybody expects. We saw our first snake charmers, which was pretty interesting, just on the side of the road. Everybody there is willing to perform for a handful of rupees. And of course, when you're from the States and you see a snake charmer, it's definitely time to pull over, and which we did. Then we went up to the Amber Fort, which was another great military complex built in the 1500s, and just a beautiful, beautiful place. The number of monuments and forts and palaces in India is mind-boggling, and this was one of our favorites. We saw one room there called the Hall of Mirrors that we actually saw replicated in several places, but it's a room where the walls are covered by small tile made out of mirrors, and the idea, we were told, was that a room could then be lit by a single candle because it would reflect back from all corners of the room. So very clever engineering going on in there. And again, back in Jaipur, we saw a number of other indications of early scientific advancement in the Indian subcontinent. We visited a place called Jantar Mantar, which is an observatory with huge outdoor instruments for plotting the planets, the stars, and the sun. And in fact, there was one sundial that was so large and so huge that it amplified the movements of the sun in such a way that you could actually stand there and watch the shadow move. And they claimed it was accurate to within 15 seconds. And so it's literally 30 or 40 feet high, and it has a stairway. You can climb up the place that is essentially the needle of the sundial and stand at the top of it. So amazing scientific instruments that are big enough to climb on.
Well, you're talking about a place that the pictures of that have made me want to go there for some time since I first saw them. And Jaipur, it looks very, very interesting. And is it a palace that's out on the lake there?
Yeah. That's called the Moon Palace, I think.
The Moon Palace, okay.
Yeah.
Which I think I've seen a lot of different pictures of.
Yeah, it's actually kind of every part of India is beautiful in its own way. And when we left Udaipur, we hopped on a train and went to an old Maharaja's hunting ground, which is now called Ranthambore National Park. And we spent 2 days there taking what they call jeep safaris. So we'd hop in a jeep and head out into the jungle. And the amazing thing there is that there are just tigers running wild there. Within this national park, there are, I think, 17 villages where people still live and people are hiking to and fro. And there are tigers everywhere. But we took solace in that our Jeep driver told us that only 3 people were eaten last year and none were tourists. So we should feel very safe.
All right.
It worked for me. I had to have something to keep me locked in my open Jeep. So.
Oh, that's right. I hadn't thought about it. A Jeep would be open. Okay. Now, one thing I was curious, though, as I was looking at Jaipur and I was looking at, I think it was the Wikipedia page, and I saw their climate data, we're talking about a fairly warm area. What time of year were you there?
Well, we went in January and February.
Okay, which is the coolest month.
Which is the right time. This was, again, given our neighbor's advice, which was you go after the monsoons and before the heat. And we were basically shirt-sleeve weather in all of India. So it was kind of 70s all the time. Very cold in the morning in the jungle, but other than that, it was shirt-sleeve weather, so it was a perfect time to go.
And it looks like monsoon season is sort of June to September.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. very, very wet. And then the hot season is unbelievably hot, according to everybody we spoke to. So we were advised well in the timing.
Well, yeah, when you say unbelievably hot, I think the average temperature is 40 in centigrade and 104 in Fahrenheit from what I'm looking at. And that's when that's an average temperature, we're talking about someplace that's fairly warm.
Yeah, fairly warm, I would say. So when we left Ranthambore, that's when we headed up to Delhi. And Delhi, again, is another study in contrasts. We had a Sikh guide for a couple of days in Delhi and a Hindu driver. So we got a little bit of both. So we went to one of the big Hindu temples, but then I thought we really had a lot of fun when we went to the big Sikh temple there. It's called Gurdwara Bangla Sahib Sikh Temple. And that's a place that one of the hallmarks of the way they operate is they feed 50,000 people free meals a day. And so we toured around the kitchen. In fact, I spent some time stirring probably the biggest pot of lentils I've ever seen in my life. But very, very giving folks. And they just feed anybody just up there. And just amazing harmony between the various religions in Delhi.
Now, is that the temple that looks like a flower blossom?
No, that's actually the Lotus Temple. That's the Hare Krishna Temple.
Oh, that's Hare Krishna. Okay.
Yeah, we did visit that temple also, but this one's a little more businesslike in its appeal, but has a beautiful, beautiful gardens and beautiful land around it. And just, again, the Indian people are beyond friendly. If you're anywhere and you look confused or you look lost, somebody will come up and talk to you. They may try to sell you something, but they're also willing to give you help. So we really, really enjoyed the people that we met in India. We're just about to the end of the trip, but we visited the spot where Gandhi was martyred, as they say there, assassinated in, I think, 48. And his last footsteps, leaving his room, which looked very much like the room we saw at Mani Bhavan in Mumbai. Again, very simple room, a mat on the floor, a spinning wheel, and a low table. But his last footsteps, as he walked from that room out to the place where he was going out to pray in the morning and where he was struck down by the assassin, those are show up in the concrete. So they've recreated his last steps, and it's a very kind of somber and solemn place. And later on in the trip, we actually, on the last day, went to the place where his cremation was held, and that's still a very revered site for the folks in Delhi. So while we were in Delhi, we visited the Jama Masjid Mosque. So it's the largest mosque in all of India, and we saw relics there that they have hidden in a back room that they were happy to show us, where they had a footprint, piece of beard hair, and a sandal of Muhammad. So that's a very holy spot for those folks in Delhi. And that mosque was built by the same emperor that built the Taj Mahal in Agra. So it's a very beautiful place. And that's in the heart of Old Delhi, which really is the Delhi that you think of when you think of the movies, with the streets full of camels and people and push carts and all that sort of stuff. It is hectic beyond belief and just amazing, massive people that all seem to get where they want to go with a very minimum of interaction. So we had to take the obligatory, and I say obligatory because it's one of those things, when you think about it, that the Taj Mahal, you kind of wonder, well, is this just the tourist trap of India? And the answer is, it is probably one of the most amazing places I've ever seen. We had a moment of panic because we had a train booked. We went to the station and they told us that because we hadn't checked in 24 hours in advance, the seats were gone. And so we actually called our driver and came back and picked us up and ended up driving 4 hours to the Taj Mahal and spending the day there at the Taj Mahal and at the Agra Fort, which was across the river from the Taj Mahal, and were just totally enchanted by just the beauty of the place. It is the symbol of India for a really good reason. It is one of the most beautiful places you'll ever see in your life.
And probably the whole thing built as a tomb.
Yeah, it was built as a tomb, a mausoleum for Shah Jahan's third wife.
I was going to say favorite wife. I didn't remember the number, but
yeah, apparently a third and favorite. Yeah, and the story we were told when we were over across the river at the Agra Fort was that he had planned to build a matching one across the river that was going to be entirely black. And basically his sons had said, that's enough. You got to leave us some money. And so he was actually imprisoned in the Agra Fort in a room that faced the Taj Mahal for the rest of his days. And the local nickname for it is the Taj Mahal, because he was forced to sit there and stare at the Taj Mahal, kind of imprisoned by his own family. So that's the story we were told. And it kind of brings a little somber note to this monument to love that he built. The last quick thing is that we met up again with our neighbors, and we went up to Chandigarh, which is a bit north of Delhi, for a wedding. And this was a wedding that's kind of beyond all weddings that I've ever been to. There were 4,000 guests at the wedding. And just the most amazing spread of food that I've ever seen. As I looked at the buffet line there, there were probably 200 stations. And I kind of thought, this is what the Bellagio Hotel would look like if Steve Wynn had any money. And just unbelievable, hundreds and hundreds of stations, thousands of guests. And again, it was really interesting for us because we were the only non-Indian folks at the wedding by virtue of being friends of the bride and groom's family. And just had the time of our life and saw something that was akin to a major spectacle, but a lot of fun and great people, and everybody had a great time and ate well.
Now, before we started recording, you said your first trip to India, but not your last.
No, absolutely. What my wife Vicky and I said, even before the trip was over, is this is not the last time we'll see India. We've only scratched the surface of the country. There's a lot more to see in the south, in the east, and even farther north up along the Nepalese border and the Pakistani border. And I am trying to figure out how to make that happen again. And the first time we went, you know, our neighbors helped us plan it. Mm-hmm. We were basically on our own for the whole trip, but it was well planned in advance. I feel a lot more comfortable about going there and kind of figuring it out on the ground. I would still probably have a couple of key points taken care of in advance, but mm-hmm. my comfort as an independent traveler in India has gone up quite a bit.
Now, what was the point at which you knew that India had captured you?
It didn't take very long. I would say probably before we left Mumbai, which was our first stop, we knew that we were in a very, very special place.
Do you remember why or what you were looking at? Or?
Well, I just think the fact that we were in a place where we take a boat from an arch built for the King and Queen of England in the early 1900s out to 5th century temples carved into rocks 6 miles offshore on an island. You know, all in the course of a half of a day. Mm-hmm. It's just that kind of contrast is just amazing to see. And yeah, that and monkeys and camels and tigers and just the diversity of animal life, people, the colors, the contrasts are just something which we just can't get enough of. Hmm.
In terms of locals you met, who left the biggest impression on you?
You know, I think the guy that we think of most fondly is a guy named Roddy, who was our driver for the time we were in Delhi. We really felt like we ended up getting to know him and his family. He brought us pictures of his kids. He wanted to know all about our kids. He, at the end of the trip, took us out for tea and introduced us to a bunch of his friends. And we exchanged cards. Very good guy, very good driver, and just a guy that would literally give you the shirt off his back. He's the guy that came and rescued us at the train station when we were booted from the train to Agra and, you know, got out of bed and came up and drove us 4 hours down to the Taj Mahal, waited for us and drove us back. And that's the kind of friendly people that you meet all over India. But we got to spend 3 or 4 days with him and really came away with a friend.
And of all the days there, which was the best day?
You know, I think it was probably in Udaipur when we woke up in the city palace. We explored the city. We took a cooking lesson. I went to a tailor and had 3 shirts made between dinner and sundown, hopped on a boat and had rose petals dropped on us as we checked into one of the original rooms in the Lake Palace. It doesn't get any better than that.
And how much did you pay for the shirts?
I think it was about $5 a piece. And it was the most amazing thing. He was using a treadle sewing machine. So he's running it with
Right. Uh-huh.
He measured me up. He wrote all the things on his hand, the measurements. He never made a pattern. We just sat there and watched. The scissors were flying. The thread was flying. And
it was performance art.
Yeah, it was performance art, and everything fit perfectly. So I think I got 3 shirts there for a total of probably $10 or $12.
Oh, interesting. One warning would you would give about India?
Well, I think you have to be careful what you eat in India. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everybody that we talked to that went to India had a few days of
Delhi belly.
Yeah, frequent trips to the Thunder Bucket, as we heard it called. And luckily, we spent a lot of money on inoculations before we went. And my daughter, for Christmas, had given me a thing called a SteriPen.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so we carried a SteriPen with us, and we were told to use that. And it's basically an ultraviolet light that you can immerse in any liquid, and it takes care of the bacteria.
So. Now, it has to be a clear liquid, as I recall.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. But that was even in bottled water. We were told that that was not a good idea to do. And mm-hmm. we managed to be there for nearly 3 weeks with no issues at all. So you just have to be careful. We did eat some food on the street. We were kind of very careful. Mm-hmm. We ate in restaurants, probably a notch or two up from what most people in India typically eat at. But wanted to be a little more safe than sorry.
Mm-hmm. Now that you've been there, what do you wish you had known before you went?
Probably the whole what I mentioned to you very early on, which is itineraries are kind of useless. Just be prepared to call audibles. I mean, every day, mm-hmm. when I look back, getting ready to talk to you about this trip, when I look back at what we had planned and what we did, it looks like two different lists entirely. And so the trick is to have a good driver who knows the city, and you just turn yourself over to them. Say, these are the things we'd like to do, but take us where you want. And we put ourselves at the hands of our drivers, and we were really happy with the way everything worked out. But it certainly wasn't the minute-by-minute itinerary that we usually use in our kind of power traveling modes.
Now, I'm curious, what did you get to because you said that to the driver that you hadn't even thought of seeing?
That's interesting. We went to a place in Jaipur called the Monkey Palace, which was really interesting, which was he drove us up a side road, and we got out, and we walked probably a mile or so to a palace where the chief deity was a huge monkey.
Mm-hmm. So a Hindu.
Yeah, but really interesting, and even if you were there on an organized tour, I doubt that anybody would go to these kind of places. We also ended up seeing something that was advertised as the oldest rock on Earth, which I'm not sure how that's verified, but when we were in Bangalore, we went to the Lalba Botanical Gardens, the centerpiece of which is a rock that they say is 3,000 million years old. So I don't know if that's a Guinness World Book of Records number, officiated number or not, but he was pretty proud of it, and we appreciated that. So they just know what works and what doesn't work. And when you plot your course in the various tour books, probably it would work if there was no traffic, but there's never no traffic.
Right, sure. Well, I don't know if they have the oldest rock in the world, but as a history buff, I mean, one of the reasons that I'd like to see India is that as far as we know, the oldest cities in the world were in India.
Ah, yeah.
So a lot of history.
Really amazing place.
When did you feel closest to home, most familiar, and when did you feel furthest from home?
Well, let me start with furthest from home. I think furthest from home was in an open Jeep. At 6 in the morning.
As tiger bait, okay.
As tiger bait. And the guy reached out. He heard an animal yelp, and he said, that's a cry of distress. There's a tiger in the area. So we just pulled over, and we just sat. And he reached out. He saw the tiger. And, you know, they're orange, and you would think, I can see a tiger if it's near me. And the answer is you can't. And he said, watch this. Look over in that direction. He reached out, and he snapped a twig. And when he snapped a twig, that tiger just came to. And because the snapping twig is the sound of prey walking towards the tiger, and that just got his attention. So actually going out and acting as bait for tigers is, I felt, probably as far away from the U.S. as possible.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the appropriate thing to do is make sound like prey, but, you know, that's just me.
Okay. Yeah, and I was thinking, because I knew the question was going to come as to when did you feel closest to home, and the answer is basically never. There's no calibration point that matches up with anything that's been in my experience. I've traveled all over the world and been to a lot of cultures with hustle and bustle, but nothing compares to this. And it's nothing like the U.S., and that's probably the reason we like it so much.
Hmm. Interesting. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in India?
I think that the one thing is when you're in the traffic, first of all, for the first 2 days when you're driving in a car, your number one, the fight flight mode is in full effect because it looks like you're in an imminent head-on collision nearly every 5 seconds. And when you get up to a traffic light, or what passes for a traffic light, everybody just widens out.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've seen that before. Okay.
You're feeling like you're at the starting gate with horses, cattle, camels, possibly elephants, definitely those little tuk-tuk taxis and a couple of cars. And it's when the light changes, you're just in a race. But
so you used to be on a 4-lane highway, and as people stop for the light, it's a 12-lane, 15, 16-lane. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But the funny thing is that on like day 3 or 4, we stopped flinching. It's amazing that you can actually get used to impending doom. And the drivers, what they told us was the three things you need in India for driving are as good horn, good brakes, and good luck.
Besides your Steripen, one thing that you would tell people to pack before they go to India?
we packed a lot of travel guides, as usual, and we had three or four, and we travel a lot, and our kids knew we were heading to India after Christmas, so travel guides were the gift of the year that year, and we carried several with us, and we also did a lot of cutting and pasting from various internet articles and things that we'd pulled together. So I think get a good idea of the things you want to do, take a good guidebook, and be prepared to change your itinerary at a moment's notice.
And with the guidebooks, were there any things that you went that the guidebooks recommended and you personally wouldn't have recommended them?
Yeah, there's one. There was one that was kind of fun, but not for the reasons that they expected. When we were in Mysore, there's an old quarry that's been turned into a garden. And we got there very late at night. And the big highlight of the evening is this kind of dancing water show, fountains with lights. And we got there, and it's very popular with the Indian folks. And some zillion people there. And as we walked in the door, a guide walked up to us and said, you know, for $5, I'll be your guide. And his name was Babu. And Babu knew his way around that place. The dancing water show was of no interest to us, but watching him work the system was absolutely worth every penny. He just he snuck us through back gates. He got us chairs when everybody else was standing. He got us to the front of lines. He also took our pictures. And this man had an intimate knowledge of how to work every button on every camera in the world. And he knew how to take nighttime shots in front of dancing waters that came out great. So, but the dancing waters weren't fun, but our night with Babu was really a blast.
Excellent. Before we go to wrap this up, anything else that you would want to leave people with before they take off for India?
Now, I just think that if you're not a veteran traveler, this is probably not a great place to do your first world tour. It's a good place if you've been to another number of places, you're familiar with signs you can't read, you're willing to poke around. But I think first-time out-of-the-country travelers probably can go somewhere else for a first cut, or else go with an organized tour. We're kind of less organized tour people, more independent, so it'll work for us. But it could be a very daunting experience for somebody that's new to this kind of hustle and bustle.
Excellent. And you know the last two questions? Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in India when what?
Well, we knew we were in India. We talked about earlier about the traffic, but there was one thing that my wife likes to point out. When we were driving from Mysore one day, we followed an army truck that had three guys hanging on the back with machine guns in their laps. And, you know, they were smiling and waving at us and waving with machine guns. And our driver thought that it was a great time to just speed past them and break the speed limit. So these guys have nerves of steel, and they're passing armed soldiers doing about double the speed limit. So there's a lot of soldiers in India, but everybody seems to be pretty friendly about everything.
And if you had to summarize India, and this is good luck with this, in just three words, what three words would you use?
Well, one of them came up earlier, which is overwhelming. It's completely overwhelming. I would say convivial, too. The people are great and fun to hang out with, and colorful. Everywhere we go, the mixes of colors and the contrast of colors made it really an exciting place to be.
Excellent. Dave, thanks so much for coming back on the Amateur Traveler and telling us of your newfound love for India.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
With that, we're going to end this episode, this encore episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. And remember, if you're interested in joining us in India, go to amateurtraveler.com/India2017. We're also doing a trip to Japan, Japan 2017. And as always, thanks so much for listening.